Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. This week, Mark Zuckerberg traded his T-shirt and jeans for a suit and made his way to Capitol Hill to testify about Facebook's handling and mishandling of user data. On Tuesday, the Facebook founder and CEO used his opening statement to apologize.
We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry. I started Facebook, I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here.
Over the course of nearly 10 hours of hearings, lawmakers grilled Zuckerberg over Russian involvement in the 2016 election, Facebook's failures in protecting the privacy of its users, and how to regulate the social media giant. It may seem like a huge, it's complicated, but we have some keenly informed analysts joining us this hour on Point, Congress, Facebook, and privacy in the digital age. You can join us on air or online. What did you hear in Mark Zuckerberg's testimony? What responsibility does Facebook have to protect your privacy? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We have a killer lineup coming up. Joining me first now from Washington is Mary Bruce. She's congressional correspondent for ABC News and covered the Mark Zuckerberg hearings on the Senate side. Mary, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So how was Zuckerberg received in Congress when he actually showed up in person for the very first time?
Yeah, his first time in the congressional hot seat. And this is something that many lawmakers up here have been waiting years for, the chance to actually question Zuckerberg. And in many ways, look, he did what he came here to do. He was humble. He took responsibility. He was well rehearsed. He was in that suit and he apologized. But it wasn't necessarily enough for many lawmakers. Look, they spent hours, as you said, up to 10 hours in total over 2 days grilling him on user privacy, on Russian meddling in the election, and importantly on what Zuckerberg and Facebook plan to do to protect your data going forward. And while Zuckerberg tried to convince Congress that his company can be trusted, the overarching response from lawmakers that we talked to as they left the hearing room are that they just don't think Zuckerberg can regulate himself, that they want to have more broad oversight from Congress of not just Facebook, but of many large tech companies in general. They feel that it's time Congress steps in and does more going forward.
Did you sense, Mary, any shift in what you were hearing from staffers, from lawmakers themselves, into where they ended up after all these questions from where they started at the beginning of the week?
I think they were satisfied in the sense that they're glad they finally got some answers. And if they didn't get answers during the committee itself, you heard Zuckerberg say over and over again, I'll have my team get back to you. We'll look into that for you. He's clearly very willing to work with Congress. And Zuckerberg himself said that he was willing to work with Congress directly on some of these regulations. Now, he didn't make very clear what regulations exactly he's willing to work with them on, just how far is he willing to go, but he certainly signaled that he's open to making changes. And I think, look, that was something that a lot of members are receptive to. The question is, what do you do going forward? Not only is how far is Facebook willing to go, but also just the political reality up here on the Hill, which is that it is going to be very hard right now in this political climate to pass any kind of sweeping new regulations to oversee some of these companies. But at least lawmakers feel like, hey, that they're maybe taking a step in that right direction, at least just by having this public airing of grievances over 2-3 days here.
You know, before we drill down on the details of some of this stuff, there are obviously serious implications of all these things. And Facebook and social media more generally are so enmeshed in our lives. At the same time, for members of Congress dealing with the chaos of the Trump era, dealing with questions of should we be bombing Syria, dealing with all kinds of challenges, foreign and domestic, how much of a spring break of this is this for them? How much is this sort of escaping to a pinata that all of them can take a turn whacking as opposed to dealing with something substantively?
Yeah, the pinata is the perfect example here. Look, the Hill certainly has a lot on its plate, to say the very least. And this is one of those instances where you do have a lot of bipartisan agreement. There is frustration, certainly, on both sides of the aisle, and both sides of the aisle seem to be willing to work together to try and put in place some stricter regulations here. You know, again, whether that can actually happen in this political climate is, I doubt it. But like most political hearings, a lot of these discussions were just a chance for lawmakers also to beat up on Facebook. You know, that's not unusual in congressional hearings. It gives lawmakers a chance to make clear their frustrations. And let's also be honest, Congress is not known as the most tech-savvy place. Uh-huh. So this was also a chance for lawmakers just to ask a lot of fundamental questions about how this platform works. Now, while a lot of members of Congress have been taking a beating for some of these questions, you know, it's not unusual to have exploratory hearings like this either, just to try and dial down it. What's really going on here? How does this platform work? You know, how do they treat your data? A lot of what may seem like basic questions, you know, for those who know this well, those out in Silicon Valley here in Washington, a lot of lawmakers were simply looking to get the lay of the land.
And before we let you race off and cover your next adventures on Capitol Hill, Mary Bruce, you know, I wanted you to weigh in on the way in which this cuts through partisan lines. It seems as though there's not the strict, red-blue divide that you might see on a lot of issues facing senators and members of the House of Representatives.
Yeah, imagine that. There are some areas of commonality here on the Hill. Now, look, that does not extend to everyone. You certainly did hear several members of Congress, especially those on the further right end of the spectrum, voicing a lot of concerns about First Amendment rights, about privacy, about making sure that, you know, not just the user data are protected, but making sure that the company isn't infringing on that as well.
Sure.
But it is a rare sight to see that you have both sides of the aisle coming together and punching that same pinata.
Mary Bruce is congressional correspondent for ABC News. Mary, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, David.
Joining me now from New York City is Nicholas Thompson. He's editor-in-chief of Wired magazine and co-authored Wired's March cover story, a notable one, Facebook's 2 years of hell. It was a deeply reported look inside the company's decision-making in the lead-up to and the aftermath of the 2016 presidential election. You can link to his recent interview with Mark Zuckerberg at our website, onpointradio.org. Nick Thompson, welcome to On Point.
Hi, David. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for being here. How serious were those questions that we heard on Capitol Hill from somebody from the standpoint who actually knows how this stuff works?
They ranged from the frustratingly inane to the profound. And there was a real mix. You know, there were some Congress people who were asking Zuckerberg for basic tech support, which was a little frustrating. He's not really the guy who should do that.
Sure.
But then there were also really important questions about how they handle privacy, how they handle your data, whether they should be broken up under antitrust. Senator Lindsey Graham pushed on that, which was a phenomenally interesting moment. And then a bunch of detailed questions about what exactly they did. Now, of course, there are 1,000 things I wish they had asked. I wish they had dug into all these other stuff. And my general sense is the congressmen and the senators weren't sufficiently prepared, but there were still some excellent and important moments.
I wanted to touch base on a couple moments that stood out to me. We can start with the Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin. He wanted to make a point about privacy as he was asking questions of Zuckerberg during the Senate Commerce and Judiciary Joint Committee hearing on Tuesday.
Mr. Zuckerberg, would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
No.
If you've messaged anybody this week, would you share with us the names of the people you've messaged?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that may be what this is all about.
Meta questions about metadata, I suppose. We also have a clip from Democratic Representative Anna Eshoo of California. She asked Zuckerberg if his data was included in the data breach of the company Cambridge Analytica. That's the political consulting firm that landed Facebook in this latest round of hot water.
Was your data included in the data sold to the malicious third parties? Your personal data?
Yes.
It was.
One of the things it seemed to me, Nick Thompson, that Zuckerberg was trying to do was to say, we need to be the shapers of the destiny. We need to get it right. We are contrite here and we're moving forward in a ton of ways. Indeed, if I recall correctly, in his interview with you, he essentially said, listen, we took the steps to forestall this from happening ever again 3 or 4 years ago. Would we only have done that 5 or 6 years ago, if I'm remembering that exchange correctly?
Yeah.
You know, why should we trust Zuckerberg that he did all that needed to be done 3 or 4 years ago? And why should we trust him now to get, you know, future things right?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's one of the underlying questions that was at the hearings. And in fact, it's kind of the underlying question that Durbin was asking there in a very smart way. Because the way Facebook should work is that you should be able to choose who sees what information of yours, right? You should be able to choose that there is a subset of people, either your family or maybe all of your friends, who know what hotel you stayed at last night. Because that's useful information, because then they can come visit you. And you should be able to choose to not have that information be public, because you don't want to be stalked and you don't want to be harassed. So Durbin's example was great. Because the core problem with Facebook is that people don't understand their privacy settings. So they actually functionally don't have that choice. And because traditionally over time, Facebook has overridden what you think it's doing. You think that you're protecting this information. You think that you're limiting it to your friends, but actually it's going to everybody and it's going to advertisers in ways you don't like.
How does that, Nick, how does that work? I mean, you'd say, you know, people are sign on and they can click on the small print and whatever, but you're saying basically, even if you read this stuff, you're not going to really fully understand what happens to your data.
Right. Well, that ideally is what Facebook is trying to fix. But to step back, over the last few years, yes, what Facebook has essentially done is they are consistently changing the rules so that information you thought was private becomes a little more public. Right. And the reason they do that is that the more your information is shared, the more your information is passed around, the better advertising services they can provide, and they justify it to themselves because they think that providing better advertising services based on higher amounts of data flowing in more different directions gets you ads that you are more likely to engage with and that are good for you. Right? But that's a trade-off, and it's a trade-off we don't consent to. They also have made a huge fundamental mistake in that they made privacy settings really opaque. Right? You have to go to 20 different places to adjust to your different privacy settings. So the challenge that they have now is, can they overhaul it? Can they change the privacy settings so they're clear, so they're easy, right? And can they never make the mistakes they've made before of overriding?
I want you to hold on with us, Nick. We're discussing Mark Zuckerberg's testimony in front of Congress and what it means for Facebook and all of us going forward. You can join the conversation. Was your user data impacted in Facebook's breach? Has this whole ordeal turned you off social media? Or do you not really care? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're discussing digital privacy and Facebook in the wake of Mark Zuckerberg's testimony on Capitol Hill this week. You can join the conversation. Who do you think owns your digital information, you or Facebook? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook itself at On Point Radio. We're talking with Nick Thompson, the editor-in-chief of Wired. He did a recent cover story and an interview with Mark Zuckerberg. I'd also like to bring in another voice from New York. Edmund Lee is the managing editor of Recode. That's a tech news website that focuses on Silicon Valley. Hey, Ed Lee, welcome to On Point.
Hi, David.
Ed, answer me this. Facebook seems really highly reactive to all this. This is not the first time they've gotten in some kind of trouble publicly, right? About data, about how we use things, about how we understand what they understand about us. you know, it can see around the corner in so many things, it seems to me, in terms of technology and innovation. Why can't it see around the corners that harm the way we feel about it and the way we feel that we are treated as users?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that really struck me in the testimony and that sort of speaks to sort of what we know about Facebook generally in terms of their leadership and Mark Zuckerberg in particular, Mark talked about their idealism, that he himself and the company have been very idealistic. And I think he also said it in a way that, you know, he felt was, oh, maybe that was a bit of a mistake. What I mean by that is their sense of idealism that Facebook is there to connect the world and we're not trying to harm anyone. We're trying to protect people as well. But that sense of idealism is partly what led to this subterfuge and this scraping of data and the selling of data, that they just weren't thinking like that, that they weren't aware of the possibility, or that they didn't focus as much on the possibility that, oh, someone could exploit this. Now, as a journalist, whenever I talk to anyone, I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, is this person lying to me? Mm-hmm. Is this the truth? How do I vet this? And that's sort of an attitude that you don't see Facebook taking. And I think, I hope, and that's probably the concern here, is that will they take that attitude going forward? And again, that goes to the heart of a lot of the questions in the testimony in the last 2 days, is how can I trust you to do the right thing? We know you to be a good person. We like that you came here. But do you have the right mindset? Do you have the right attitude? And can you stop being so idealistic?
You know, Ed, one of the things that I've noticed over the years as a reporter is that there's this question of platform versus publisher. Sounds pretty technical, but basically, right. You know, are you a platform? That is, are you a way in which people communicate? Think of that like AT&T or Verizon. You know, they don't get regulated simply because you say something objectionable on the phone, right? And so they say, if we're a platform, we shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't punish us for what people say. On the other hand, when people say, well, maybe we should regulate you like a platform, as AT&T and Verizon are rather heavily, they say,
no, right.
We're not a public utility. We're not in this regard. We need to be thought of as a place where free speech can flourish, and you shouldn't be doing that. I can't figure out if I think the dance is disingenuous, whether they've invented something that is different and we need a new concept and way to think about its relationship to limits and restrictions. But it seems to me always to end with the idea of, we're the people who can best figure out how to solve the problems that we've created.
That attitude is pervasive, not just at Facebook, but at Silicon Valley generally. And I do think it is genuine in that they're not trying to be media companies, or they're not trying to sort of shy away from the possibility that there's deeper responsibility to what it means to be a platform that might be akin to a media company. I do think it's something new. I do think it's an emergent property, a different kind of dynamic that the laws don't quite sort of accurately describe. So I think there's room for sort of creating some kind of regulation or some kind of legislation that encompasses that. We don't know what that is just yet. And I honestly don't think Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg or Silicon Valley generally knows either. They're not a utility. They're not a media company. But as we heard Mark say, they do take responsibility for the content. I think that is an important step. That's an important acknowledgement. They've said that before as well. So that's not necessarily new. But it does open up a can of worms, right? Because in the future, if anyone doesn't like the content that they see, they might want to sue Facebook and say, hey, you said you're responsible for the content.
This is on you, buddy, right?
It's on you. So you said so. So I think that's probably too extreme. I think, you know, within reason, I think the idea is that they're going to do their utmost to make it a safe environment, a good environment with all kinds of ideas. Again, I don't think the laws, I don't think the regulations right now really accurately describe that situation. And that's where the big gap is. And that's where the room is to hopefully get something done.
Congressman Frank Pallone of New Jersey pressed Zuckerberg for a yes or no answer about the question of his commitment to privacy in yesterday's House hearing. Let's listen to that exchange.
Will you make the commitment to change all the user to changing all the user default settings to minimize to the greatest extent possible the collection and use of users' data? I don't think that's hard for you to say yes to, unless I'm missing something.
Congressman, this is a complex issue that I think deserves more than a one-word answer.
Well, again, that's disappointing to me.
A disappointment to Congressman Pallone, but perhaps reflective of some kind of reality at social media. Nick Thompson, editor of Wired magazine. Zuckerberg told members of Congress this week that he welcomes regulation, that he wants regulation, that it would make a certain sense. What does he seem to mean by that? What kind of involvement is he willing to have from the federal government in how he runs the company that he helped to create?
Well, I think what he was saying there is he was, first of all, just trying to make it clear that he's not a stereotypical libertarian person from Silicon Valley who is opposed to all regulation. So it's partly a sort of statement of who I am. As for the specific regulation that he's in favor of, he is definitely in favor of regulation that brings transparency over advertising, the standards that you have on digital platforms, and brings them into accordance with the standards you have for radio advertising or television advertising, right? So there are disclosure rules if, for example, you buy an ad in support of a political campaign on Facebook. Up to now, we don't have that. He thinks that would be a good idea. He also seems generally in favor of something like the GDPR, the privacy rule that we have in Europe. And he thinks that having something like that in the United States would probably help synchronize, lay out exactly what the privacy standards they have to meet. What he seemed very hesitant about were specific regulations on how to filter and sort content, particularly, for example, the question of should Congress pass a law saying that social media platforms have to eliminate hate speech or have to eliminate false speech. To Zuckerberg, that gets really messy and really complicated, and he also believes, rightly, I think, that the speed at which technology is changing right now means that almost by definition, any law that is passed requiring specific actions will be obsolete because of the way artificial intelligence and the way that Facebook can filter and sort content changes. And then the last category, right, so he's in favor of ad transparency, he's probably in favor of some kind of privacy, he's definitely against specific content filtering. Then the last category would be a law breaking up Facebook in some way. Again, that's what Lindsey Graham pointed out. Zuckerberg would want nothing to do with that, obviously.
We've got a caller on line three, I believe. Nate is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Nate, I think you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me. I'm actually pleased with the transparency aspect in two different ways. Mm-hmm. The first is the idea that everyone will be able to see the political ads rather than them being targeted to what metadata probably says will be the least questioning of them, and that way the rest of society can look at them and fact-check them as well. And also the idea that issue ads would be included in what's labeled political, because those have always, a lot of the time, been political anyways, and I think in that way Zuckerberg actually outshined a pair of the senators who were asking him about speech and issue ads, because they almost felt like we're advocating for ads no matter how dishonest they may be.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we're going to show potentially what these ads are so people can figure them out and where they're coming from.
Nate, thank you so much for that your call and that optimistic note. Nick Thompson of Wired Magazine. Zuckerberg did promise more transparency. He promised to take these issues seriously. One of the things that struck me, I think he said that artificial intelligence, AI, will solve problems in a scalable way. I assume that means in a way which won't require them to hire hundreds of millions of people to deal with this. Should we trust that? I mean, it seemed to me that not so many weeks ago, a lot of people were reporting that folks over in Menlo Park at Facebook had become convinced the algorithm had gotten away from them a little bit and that it was doing things that they couldn't quite keep up with.
So, well, I think all parts of that are true, right? So Facebook's core newsfeed algorithm is something that is at the core of all of these problems. They've introduced a whole bunch of changes to make sure that it doesn't encourage the spread of disinformation and sort us more into filter bubble. So that is one issue. On the issue of artificial intelligence, this is super interesting. Yes, artificial intelligence is increasing rapidly. It will give Facebook incredible powers, but it will also bring massive complexities, right? Because let's say Facebook has the capacity through artificial intelligence and language analysis to pretty precisely identify what is hate speech. Okay, so should they implement that and then immediately, without humans intervening, erase that content? Well, maybe you'd reduce the amount of hate speech on Facebook, but you'd also reduce some other stuff. And you'd probably knock out some stuff that really wouldn't be classified as hate speech because it's hard to categorize. So then that leads to a free speech issue. That's complicated. Now imagine an even more complicated thing. Let's say that Facebook is able to use artificial intelligence to analyze the way that you are typing and the things you are looking up, and to identify, for example, that you have Alzheimer's, right? Or you have impending Alzheimer's. That gets really complicated, too, because maybe it's a service, if they can tell you, but also maybe that's a huge violation of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're entering this period where Facebook, with its incredibly talented engineers, with its growth of this massive technology, and with all of the data that it has, is going to have kind of amazing powers, but powers that we're not going to be entirely comfortable with as a society. So that is going to be something to watch, something to talk about, something to observe, and something for Zuckerberg to spend a lot of time thinking about.
You know, it's funny, Sheryl Sandberg and Zuckerberg, I think, in recent days have alluded to points at which lives were saved by people posting on Facebook, ways in which people made connections, ways in which people raised money for people flooded in Houston and Puerto Rico. You're saying this really is a benefit, not simply a something, a nice little charitable sideline of a modest measure that can – there are genuinely, truly great possibilities here that are yielded by the same technologies, the same insights that yield the things that trouble people so much.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm an avid user of Facebook. I haven't possibly considered leaving Facebook. It is a great way to connect with people. It is a great way to learn things. It is a great way for positive social movements to organize and spread. You know, but I do think that one of the absolutely key things is what Ed said a few minutes ago, which is that Facebook has been far too focused on that. And they have genuinely believed that more people using Facebook will make all societal problems better.
Mm-hmm.
And their idealism, you know, that word is synonymous with their naivete. And they just did not realize that these tools, which do a lot of good, can also do a lot of harm. So we're at this funny point where for most of Facebook's history, they only focused on the positive. They didn't think of the bad stuff. And now for like the last 3 months, like American society has only been focused on the bad stuff. So you kind of have to remind them of the good stuff, too.
We've got a call from Katie. She's calling us from College Grove, Tennessee. Katie, please go ahead.
Hi, I think what the last gentleman just said is actually really pretty key. Facebook has really kind of changed society, just like the railroad, when it opened the doors to communication across the country. There are massive shifts that have happened in society, and I do think that what he said is absolutely key. I think it's important to keep it in perspective, you know, giving Facebook all power. We got to remember, people, the ultimate power lies in the people of our republic to utilize common sense and to stand for something. And I think Facebook is an amazing avenue that can, with a lot of back-end thinking, really help to steer our country back to a little bit of common sense, but it's not going to be an easy pathway. And I think Zuckerberg is actually in a really great position to be able
sure.
to really, you know, take the bull by the horns and step back and say, hey, you know, you're right. We've become huge.
So,
you know, the idea of regulation isn't a bad idea. I don't know what it is. He doesn't know what it is, but maybe it's time. Rules and regulations are important. This is huge. This is a game changer. And I think here's the other issue. Privacy, people, we're at a day and age where millennials are wanting to, you know, cars. We want driverless cars. We want everything quicker, faster. Are people really concerned about privacy? Who is? Let's fine-tune the demographics of the Facebook users. I think that has to be involved in this, you know, going forward with how to regulate and mandate our future as a society. I mean,
and Katie, I think that's actually a great point, and thank you for that call. There was that very issue was addressed, however, from a different angle by Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana. He was pretty direct in talking to Mark Zuckerberg about his concerns about privacy and about why he thinks it's hard for people to understand exactly what privacy means in the context of Facebook.
Let's start with the user agreement. Here's what everybody's been trying to tell you today, and I say this gently. Your user agreement sucks. You can spot me 75 IQ points. If I can figure it out, you can figure it out. The purpose of that user agreement is to cover Facebook's rear end.
Ed Lee, how serious is the concern over privacy? Obviously, you have tens of millions, maybe more than 100 million people whose data was breached in the Cambridge Analytica question, and there seem to be other instances of similar breaches and sharing of data. Is this something we should worry about, or is this something where consumers, because of the language of, oh, my God, my data has been breached, are overworked about something that actually is quite helpful so that we can use Waze when we drive and we can have medical records at our fingertips, and there are other things that become very useful for the way in which society works in the modern age?
That question goes to what is essentially the grand bargain here, right, with Facebook, which is you give me your stuff as a user and I give you the service for free. Along with that comes this sense of, you know, that privacy is this – is an idea that, you know, it really changes in that form, right? And I think a lot of users, a lot of young users in particular, aren't as concerned as maybe earlier generations have been about what privacy is or what they're willing to share, because it's a sharing generation. You know, Mark Zuckerberg himself said after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, they hadn't really seen that much of a drop off in usage. So that tells us a whole bunch of things, right? It tells us that people maybe aren't as concerned as they maybe should be about what's happened. But that also, even if they were concerned, it's sort of like, well, I can't quite leave this service, right? It's one of these things where it's such a fabric of my life. It's such a utility in a lot of ways that, you know, I'm still going to sort of, you know, bite the bullet and go engage with it. I think, however, the bigger question, though, is a sense of informed consent, right? Mark Zuckerberg kept saying, well, people have control over the data. They know what they're doing, and we're going to make it more transparent for them. I think a lot of people aren't entirely aware that the specific actions that they take on the service could result in a certain kind of data point, which would lead to a certain type of advertising or who knows what else. And I think that's the big question, and that's the big gray area that Facebook hasn't really addressed or filled in.
Ed, Nick, I'd like you both to stick with us. We're discussing Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, what they mean for our personal data. We're about to be joined by a former Facebook executive who thought about these very issues. You can join the conversation. Would you pay for a version of Facebook without ads? Do you think Facebook should be punished for the data breach? Or is it up to users to be more responsible for their own profiles? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Are you funnier than Fallon? More amusing than Aziz? More clever than Click and Clack? Well, if you've got an idea that'll make people laugh, enter WBUR's Next Great Show contest for a chance to get your show on the air. To find out more, go to WBUR.org/nextgreatshow.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're discussing Facebook and what it would take to regulate it. You can join the conversation. Should Facebook be regulated? Do you think that Congress should do it? Do you trust Facebook to set its own limits? Follow us on Twitter and find us, yes, on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests today are Nick Thompson, he's editor-in-chief of Wired, and Edmund Lee, managing editor of Recode. Let's bring in another voice into this conversation. Dipayan Ghosh joins me in studio. He was U.S. privacy and public policy advisor at Facebook from 2015 to 2017. It's a long resume. He's been a former technology and economic policy advisor at the White House during the Obama administration and is now a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Dipayan, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
All right. So you're not a lawmaker. You're not doing performance for constituents. You've been in the heart of the belly of, we could say, the beast of the social media giant itself. How effective did you find Mark Zuckerberg at allaying the concerns being expressed on a substantive level?
Well, I think that Mark did an excellent job yesterday of really addressing some of the concerns of lawmakers and you know, day before yesterday as well, obviously, both in the Senate and the House. I think he faced a lot of tough questions. And he responded in a way that got to the heart of many issues, and there are certain points, finer points that you know, are really difficult to address in a hearing in the situation that he was in yesterday. But he's an incredibly thoughtful person dealing with a very difficult issue at a difficult time right now, and I think that he did a pretty good job this week.
You seem to acknowledge there were a few things that he might not have done as well. Where do you think he didn't substantively address some of the important things that were being asked of him?
Well, you know, I think that I wouldn't necessarily say he didn't substantively address issues as much as, you know, not having in front of him the right answer.
Well, we've got a clip that sort of illustrates that. The Washington Post took a slightly comedic take on that. Here's part of a compilation they did. It tallies the numbers of times Zuckerberg promised to follow up. We have that here.
I can make sure that our team follows up, have my team follow up with you on more information if that would be helpful.
Find out the answer and get back to me.
I'll have my team get back to you. Yes, and I'll have my team follow up with you so that way we can have this discussion.
I want to make sure we get this right, so I want to have my team follow up with you on that.
And to be fair, those dings were courtesy of the Washington Post, not of the Senate or House committees involved there. You're somebody, Dipayan Ghosh, who has articulated a desire for there to be regulation and for there to be a kind of regulation that is not simply light touch about disclosure, but really setting certain baselines on privacy. What would you envision? This is not something Zuckerberg has embraced or Facebook lobbyists have called for. What would you envision and how might that work?
Well, I think on a lot of the points that where Mark wasn't able to quite provide an answer directly yesterday, I think those are the areas where we need to think about regulation. And I don't mind the fact that Facebook wasn't able to come forward with answers on antitrust or privacy or transparency in the context of this hearing, because it really is a regulatory framework that needs to be defined by the public, needs to be advised by the public and brought forward by whether it's Congress or a state legislature or another regulatory body overseas. I think those are the areas, though. Market competition, privacy, and
but when you're saying – yeah, sure. When you're saying you want a certain level of protection there for privacy, you know, in this country we haven't had that. In Europe they have. I'm sure other countries have certain other kinds of regimes. What are you interested in having people feel secure about?
Well, you know, I think the really core pieces of privacy here are not – It's not exactly about, you know, XYZ companies can or cannot collect certain categories of data. That type of a regulation can create arbitrary walls that really stifle digital commerce and the seamlessness of the internet. And we all want the free flow of information over our main medium of communication today. I think it's really about choice for consumers and transparency for consumers. And what I mean by that is choice as in consumers being able to actively and meaningfully consent to the collection of their data and have that data be used in certain contexts, whether it's for targeted advertising or for insurance or whatever it might be. And transparency in the sense that consumers should have a better idea of how Facebook works. Consumers should have a better idea of how credit agencies work. They should have a better idea of how companies that are developing algorithms that make key decisions about their lives, how those algorithms work.
So it's really more about disclosure in the transactions. You wouldn't say certain kinds of things would be off limit for sharing unless people were to opt into that as opposed to giving them the chance to opt out. It's funny. You know, my sense is that the choice of whether you say people will have to affirmatively decide to do something is a lot different in the outcome if you say people have the opportunity to decide not to do something.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting point of opt-out versus opt-in. Of course, on Facebook, just like many other internet platforms, most other internet platforms, the framework is generally, you know, you opt in to use the service by signing up for the terms of service, but then you also these companies try to then also use opt-out frameworks when they're speaking about the context of targeted advertising or use of data with third parties or whatever it might be. And so it is absolutely the case that we need to think about where opt-in might be more appropriate. In which contexts do consumers deserve a little bit more meaningful consent?
And briefly, when people are offered the chance to opt in as opposed to opt out, how many people say, yeah, sign me up, use my data, go? How high the levels of participation there?
It's a huge discrepancy. When a company uses opt out, meaning that they roll out a service – by default, consumers are signed into using that service unless they opt out. The participation rate is 85% to 90%. When consumers have to opt in to the service, that is, let's say, opt into the use of their data for targeted advertising upfront, the participation rate is much lower, 10% to 15%. So that's like the whole business.
Let's go. We've got a caller, Jim, from Omaha. Jim, why don't you tell us what you're thinking on this?
Hi, David. There are people out there like me who have never been on Facebook, but I do Google. And so Google has my personal data, and that's actually starting to scare me. Mm-hmm. So do we have to wait for Google to make a mistake before we investigate them? I think while we're investigating Facebook, we should investigate all of these data mining companies before any more mistakes are made. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Jim. Nick Thompson, editor-in-chief of Wired Magazine, you followed this industry closely. You followed Facebook and Google and the other data giants closely. How likely are they going to be to accept or tolerate this kind of proposal for significant data privacy protections? How likely would they be to be receptive to the idea of being mandated to go to more of an opt-in default rather than an opt-out default?
Well, I think that they're going to be reluctant to do that. And the reason for that is that if you allow people to opt in as opposed to opt out, you end up getting much less data from them. And remember, like, the data that we give the companies actually makes the products better, right? It's useful. One of the services that Facebook does is it recommends friends to us. If Facebook doesn't have any of our data, it can't really figure out who our friends are and recommend friends to us. So the product works less well. And people should be able to make the trade-off, but I think that Facebook, Google, and all the companies will be very reluctant to switch the whole framework because then, A, they'll make substantially less money, which they don't want to do, and two, their products will work less well. To Jim's question, which I think is related and really interesting, yeah, Facebook is getting pounded right now, and it's a little bit unfair because you could pound the other companies for many of the same things. And if you had as many reporters digging into Google right now and into possible privacy violations, you'd find some interesting stuff, you know, and there would be lots of interesting questions for Congress to ask them. So Facebook kind of got a free pass for a long time, you know, free pass on privacy, and now they're really getting hammered. It's a little bit unfair, but maybe it is fair because they got so many years off from this. But yeah, Jim's point is good. You know, there's going to be a reckoning that's going to spread through Silicon Valley, and I would suspect that the next privacy panic will involve another company and another thing, and we'll see what happens.
Presumably a Google, an Amazon, one of the other giants. Nick, before we let you go, you know, Ed talked about the idealism. DePayan talked about sort of the good faith effort to answer a lot of these questions. On the other hand, think back just, what is it, 6-7 years to when the Federal Trade Commission weighed in and said, you know, you guys have had some problems here. You need to fix things up. And Facebook said, we're on it. We'll sign an agreement. We're going to keep good faith on that. My sense, although I'm interested in your take on that, is that people have felt, in retrospect, it wasn't enforced all that well, and it certainly wasn't lived up to by Facebook itself. How sincere does your reporting show such efforts to be?
I think that that's a really interesting question with a complicated answer, because I think that the people who run Facebook, based on my reporting and based on getting to know a bunch of them, they are like genuinely good people. If you're going to have technology overlords, like, they're good people to have as technology overlords. They're not in it to make lots of money and get bigger yachts, right? They're not in it for totally selfish reasons or because they want to, you know, host.
So even though Zuckerberg basically buys his own neighborhood so that he has restricted limitations to his physical space, you're saying basically in his real public self, this is not a malevolent force.
For people with, you know, tens of billions of dollars, they're benevolent for that kind of person.
Sure.
So on the other hand, on the privacy thing, they really, really haven't paid as much attention as they should, particularly given the FTC consent decree. They let it slide in a way they should not have. They did not follow they may have followed the letter of the law, right? And they had, you know, PwC audit their actions. They did not take this as a core value. It just doesn't, and again, I don't think that's malevolence. I think it's that, A, it doesn't interest them. B, they feel like norms of privacy are changing so quickly that they don't really have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Three, they make more money if they don't worry about privacy. And four, like, the stuff that just interests Mark Zuckerberg is not user privacy. It's artificial intelligence and virtual reality and what's going to happen in 15 years. He just doesn't actually care that much about this other stuff. So I think that's what's been going on at the company.
We've been joined there by Nicholas Thompson. He's editor-in-chief of Wired, done recent reporting and interviews with Mark Zuckerberg. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. It was really fun.
DePayan Ghosh, you know, one of the questions that we're facing are the ways in which Zuckerberg and Facebook approach this philosophically. We've got a call now from Emily in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Emily, tell us your thoughts. What are you stirred by seeing all this play out?
Hi, David. Thanks so much for having me on. I was listening to the hearings last night, or a replay of them, and I was struck when Zuckerberg mentioned that that Facebook really should take control of the content or take responsibility for the content on their site. But he also acknowledged this can be really difficult, particularly because Facebook is has turned into this sort of universal platform. So what might be considered acceptable content in one country or in one continent might not another. You know, for example, what is hate speech in one country or what is, you know, inciting a violent rebellion, you know, might be bad in one country but okay in another. So how do you see him, if he does take action, approaching this question sort of moral and cultural relativism?
Emily, thank you for your call. I've got somebody sitting right across from me, an expert in such thing. Dipayan Ghosh was, of course, a former privacy and public policy advisor at Facebook. How do you deal with that when you've got a social media platform that clearly crosses borders and yet an interest in regulating this here in this country?
Well, it's a very complicated and thorny issue. Facebook, for the longest time, along with all the other internet companies, has been trying to make the case that it is an agnostic platform. Meanwhile, a lot of media companies and many people think that Facebook should be regulated more like a more traditional media company, something like the New York Times, which writes and publishes all of its information on the front page. I think increasingly these companies, Facebook, Google, Twitter, they're neither here nor there. They can't necessarily make the case that they're agnostic platforms because they tell users what to look at. Out of a universe of potential posts that you could look at, they raise the 50 and rank them in your newsfeed or in your Google search engine results page. And they are defining what you see to an extent. Meanwhile, they're not media companies either. They're not writing the content. They're not publishing it. So we've got to figure out a balance between free speech and user safety and security. So I love that question.
Ed Lee, take us home. How much more confidence do you have in Facebook and its leadership this week than you might have had a bit earlier this spring? And how capable do you think are our elected officials in playing a constructive role in dealing with this?
I think I'm certainly a notch more confident in Facebook's leadership, not necessarily because I think Mark did do a good job of explaining and presenting himself and being contrite and also engaging with the questions. I think it's more a function of the fact that he probably doesn't want to ever have to go through that again. So he's going to go back and say, we can't, you know, we need to fix this and make sure that we're complying. The other side of it, however, you know, the lack of sophistication amongst the sort of the leadership of the country is a bit more concerning, right? I think if there's going to be effective regulation or effective sense of what the floor should be for consumers and to protecting consumers, they still need to do a lot more of their homework.
It was interesting. It was interesting to see the extent to which he wanted to engage in private conversations on that rather than doing that in public, right?
Exactly. And frankly, whether it's this hearing or any other hearing, that's where the deals are all really made, is off camera, right, is in the back room. So there are deals to be made. I'm sure there will be some better protections. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the country, for regular users, they need to press their representatives to get better informed about how this works so that they can create a better system, a more fair floor for how this would operate for everybody.
That's Edmund Lee. He's managing editor of Recode. We also spoke with Nicholas Thompson, editor-chief in Wired. And we're joined here in studio by Dipayan Ghosh, former privacy and public policy advisor at Facebook. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us, yes, on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.